Welcome to the Commentary Magazine podcast. It's July 6th, 2016. I'm John Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary. Sitting with me in our capacious conference room, high atop New York's Garmin Center, Abe Greenwald, our senior editor. Hello, Abe.
Hello, John.
And manning the headphones, listening, editing, managing the podcast, Noah Rothman, our assistant online editor. Hi, Noah.
Hi, John.
Well, I don't know what to talk about. Just because the possible next president of the United States was accused of being extremely careless with her treatment of classified information, but not quite careless enough to reach the standard of gross negligence that would require an indictment, Hillary Clinton is the least cleared person in American political history. In some ways, the worst possible thing that could have happened to her has happened to her, which is if she were indicted, she could actually make some kind of a case that the indictment was a railroading, was politically motivated by a Republican, even though the Republican was nominated by a Democrat, and that this was an effort to overturn the results of the election. As it stands, she has to accept the FBI's verdict, which is that at the very least she was grossly irresponsible, and will have this shadow cast over her for the rest of the election and indeed her possible presidency, because if you think about it, she's now got to manage the executive branch, which has a very extensive clearance system, and under some understandings of what it takes to get security clearance, the president of the United States would now no longer be granted a security clearance were that possible. It's not, because the president of the United States is the figure in whom the executive branch resides and therefore is by definition someone with a security clearance. But what about the people who work very closely with her? We don't know what's going to happen to Huma Abedin, her closest aide, who apparently aided and abetted in this process, as did Cheryl Mills, another very close aide. What if they go into the White House? They certainly can be denied a security clearance based on this process, and obviously the president can probably overrule that process, being the head of the executive branch, but we're still talking about a pretty astonishing turn of events, even though many people, and Noah, I think, should probably take this on, are dismayed by the fact that James Comey issued an indictment and then didn't indict her. Is that basically what you would say?
Yeah, that's perfectly fair. It was a searing rhetorical indictment over the course of his entire address. And then even when he said, you know, but no prosecutor would probably bring this case, then he kind of undermined his own logic by sort of noting that there are consequences that anybody in this position would face if they weren't Hillary Clinton. And that's the one thing that you can't get around. I'm not a conspiracist. I think conspiracy theories are generally paranoia. But I would also say that Americans who see in this something untoward have a point about the optics. Optics that Democrats themselves have been said was a problem. In the last week, you had former President Bill Clinton taking a one-on-one meeting with the Attorney General. That was so egregious, so offensive, that even Democrats demanded that there be some recompense made for that offense to public sensibilities. So the Attorney General says, okay, FBI Director James Comey, the fate of the Obama presidency is in your hands.
The Hillary Clinton presidency.
The Hillary Clinton presidency and the Obama presidency, because she will defend the legacy of President Barack Obama. Right. The entire Democratic Party is now in your hands. Their fate is yours to make with as you will. And that pressure then yields, over the course of 72 hours or so later, a really damning indictment and then a decision not to indict. Whereas you even have, you know, people who were, and saying that there's no intent there, and you have people who were indicted for mishandling classified documents or tent or no. So it really leaves a lot of people with more questions than answers. And I think anybody who's dismayed by this has a real point. Whether or not it's a conspiracy, I wouldn't say it is. But it's most certainly, you know, disconcerting about the independence of the judiciary.
Yeah, I mean, I think that
The judiciary.
The prosecutorial independence. Right. It doesn't. Although that, by the way, is part of the problem, which is that Comey is not the prosecutor. He was only supposed to be the fact finder. Comey was a prosecutor. He was the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn, and you know, performed there very creditably, and he acted as though he were the person responsible for prosecuting the case, but he was not. His purpose was simply the FBI was fact finding on the case and was supposed to present its fact file to prosecutors or to the attorney general, who would then determine whether or not to indict. It's beyond his writ, as Michael Lucchese, the former attorney general of the United States, says today in the Wall Street Journal. It was not his writ to be the person to decide whether or not there was a prosecution. It was his writ to be the fact finder.
So the AG kind of just deferred to the FBI, something that is really kind of outside his purview.
Yeah, but tonally, he acted as though he were the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, and he was deciding whether or not to, you know, indict somebody.
And, you know,
or a special prosecutor.
And given what Mike Lucchese wrote about that, while I share Noah's distaste for conspiracy theories, and I don't think there's an as organized conspiracy at work here, it certainly casts Loretta Lynch's words in a very strange shadow when she said, "I will go on the advice of the FBI." And now Mike Lucchese is saying, well, that Comey sort of gave advice in a way that one in his position is not supposed to do.
Right. Well, I mean, and he would know because he filled the job.
That's right.
One click before Loretta Lynch, it was Mike Lucchese sitting, as the Attorney General of the United States. The other thing I thought was striking was the phrase that Comey used when he said no reasonable prosecutor would indict based on this set of facts. And Andy McCarthy, a contributor to Commentary, contributing editor at National Review, who was in fact a leading American prosecutor in the 1990s, prosecuted the Blind Shake case. A friend of Comey's said, "I would have indicted." To me, like this is a totally indictable case, and that the standard that Comey seemed to think that Hillary did not meet, which was a standard of gross negligence in the handling of classified information, she precisely did meet in his reading of the term, because gross negligence means you do not have to display the intent to pass on secrets, merely that you are so astoundingly careless with them that you place the security of the United States at risk by making that accessible.
And isn't that sort of like, no, I'm not comparing the two at all, but looking at the question of intent, isn't it sort of like the difference between, say, murder and second-degree manslaughter? I mean, still has to be a law for good reasons against carelessly taking a life or carelessly
intent doesn't come into it. There was a prosecution and a conviction of a Navy man in last year in 2015, summer 2015, who put classified documents on a thumb drive and without intent to distribute them whatsoever, just mishandled them.
That's right.
And that mishandling resulted in a sentence of 2 years and a fine of $7,500.
By the way, you don't even have to mishandle. There were two cases in the 1990s and then the 2000s. Larry Franklin, a Defense Department analyst, who was convicted for having brought classified information from his house to his country house in West Virginia, when you're only allowed to bring it 25. There was a 25-mile radius out from Langley, from the CIA headquarters, and if you went beyond 25 miles, it was considered that you were removing information from the proper geographic region. And because they were trying to get him for other reasons, because they were trying to nail AIPAC, they convicted him and he got a 5-year sentence. That's one case. In another case, it was determined that the CIA director himself, John Deutsch, had put classified information on his home computer. Not that he had distributed it, not that he'd emailed it, not that it appeared, but that it was simply on his home laptop. And he had to be pardoned by Bill Clinton rather than face criminal charges. So we have plenty of history of people being taken through the ringer for having done stuff that did not involve the distribution of classified information. And apparently in this case, at least eight cases, we have cases of the forwarding of classified information by Hillary Clinton from her homebrew server. So, look, I don't know. I've seen, I am a deep skeptic about political prosecutions. I have a family member who was railroaded in the early 90s by Lawrence Walsh. I've seen it time and again. People get very excited about the possibility of nailing their political adversaries through the courts. I think it's a disgusting approach. So I am loath to sort of simply assume that Hillary should have been indicted. I'm, you know, didn't gather the facts myself. I don't know what was in the emails and all of that. But the Comey statement, I think, was a disastrous political mistake for this country. That is to say, if he was going to say it is simply the case that what happened did not meet the standard for indictment, he could have just said that. Instead, by making this statement in which he praises the FBI's independence and says no one told him what to do or what to say, and Hillary did this terrible thing and that terrible thing and the other terrible thing, but I'm not indicting her, all he has done now is he has cast a shadow on her potential presidency, and we are going to have 50 years more of the notion that America is, as Donald Trump says, rigged, simply from this case.
Well,
but that's assuming that Comey acted in all innocence, which, in fact, I do. But
and with that in mind, so the New York Times this morning had a piece about how Trump was sort of blowing his response already, because instead of using yesterday's statement to attack Hillary for what was disclosed about her, he's using this as evidence to further his case that the system is rigged. I'm not entirely sure that he needs to look at this as an either-or proposition. I mean, he can certainly attack Hillary and certainly continue to say the system is rigged. I mean, I'm sure he will overplay both. But
Trump thinks the system is rigged because he is one of the riggers of the system. I mean, maybe not the federal system, but, you know, his entire career involves the use of tricks with public officials, variances, certain types of state and local political clearances, and that's why he believes it, because he himself is a participant, has been a participant in the rigging of the system. And in this case, you know, in that sense, you know, he has every reason, I think, to look at the federal system and think, well, you know, it's all rigged. And, you know, what did he say? He said last night that the Attorney General of the United States received a bribe from Bill Clinton on the tarmac of the Las Vegas airport. That bribe could be that she was going to stay in office, or that bribe could have been a bribe. Now, let's just unpack that for a second. The Republican candidate for president of the United States has accused the former president of the United States of attempting to bribe the Attorney General of the United States.
It's not even his most incendiary comment in the last 12 hours.
No, and it's not even... The problem is, and this is where I say Comey did this country a real disservice, the problem is that you can't simply dismiss it out of hand as being outrageous and unreasonable, because what did it mean that everybody in America, including Democrats, went totally nuts last week when they heard that Clinton had, you know, as I say in my column in the New York Post today, had, you know, gone like Mrs. Kravitz in Bewitched from his plane to Loretta Lynch's plane asking for a cup of sugar. I mean, you know, who does that? Who wanders around tarmacs? Because it could only be that he wanted to pay her a visit for ill intent, you know, and that's where we are, and that's the country that we now live in. And conspiracy theorists, we fight against conspiracy theorists day and night, and they have just been given a giant, big, whacking bowl of cereal to eat and slaver over.
But isn't the simplest explanation not necessarily a conspiracy theory, but an allegation of, I guess, an abuse of the position of, say, the FBI director, and along the same lines of Chief Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, who, instead of misinterpreting the Affordable Care Act, rewrote the law in his decision in order to avoid the appearance of interfering with the political process. I mean, that's not his job, but he was loath to reshape the law in a fashion that he believed voters and the legislative branch should have been privy to. That should have been their jurisdiction. So he kind of reinterpreted his mission a little bit in a way that kind of really undermined the independence of the Supreme Court. Isn't that kind of a very similar sort of circumstances that the FBI director found himself in?
Well, it sort of is, although, I mean, John Roberts is genuinely independent and is supposed to, you know, is a genuinely independent figure in a co-equal branch of government with the executive and the legislative branches. And so if indeed he did what a lot of us think he did, what he did was an astounding breach of his responsibility to determine what is and what is not constitutional. Having said that, it is an unbelievable burden to place on the director of the FBI to say, okay, it's July, you know, it's the first week of July, and there's an election in November, and you just go and indict the Democratic nominee for president now. You know, 2 weeks before the Democratic convention, so that the entire country is thrown into chaos, and maybe the election results are changed as a result of this, and you are going to be the person in history who will be responsible for having weighted the election one way or the other. That's a lot to put on somebody's shoulders, and he is not a prosecutor. He is a cop. He runs the federal police agency. That is not the job of the FBI director to indict the Democratic nominee for president. In fact, that's why the special prosecutors exist, and why it's astounding that they didn't appoint an independent counsel in this case. I'm not talking about a really, you know, totally, I think the original independent counsel law was unconstitutional because it made these officials not have beholden to anybody. But you can have in this case, you were having a Democratic executive branch investigating a Democratic political official who's going to run for president. If you could design a case in which you were supposed to appoint an independent prosecutor to handle the specifics of this matter, or an independent investigator, whatever you want to call it, this was the case. And we now see the cost of it because, as I say, the idea that the Clintons have fixed the American system is now going to be a permanent feature of American politics. It already was, but it will now be hardened for another two generations easily.
But as you said in the beginning, it's not like she got off in this situation. Right. She was really thoroughly indicted in that speech by Director Comey, and he went as far as to say that this person is very likely compromised. Like her emails have possibly been exposed, quite possibly, to the point where we can't really prove it, but we're almost sure that hostile foreign actors have had access to her emails and could compromise her as a candidate. She is a national security risk if the Republican Party. So he put his finger on the scales of the political process there. And if the Republican Party was a competent party, they could turn into a referendum.
So in that case, he put his finger on the scale, but didn't put his finger on that. That's the whole point. He was trying to have it every which way. It's like, yes, I know she did something bad, but no, I'm not gonna basically pre-overturn the results of the election. So I'm gonna give you ammunition, and I'm not gonna give you ammunition. And that's not, you know, that's obviously not the job. But I think in the end, the thing that really indicts him was the statement that no reasonable prosecutor would have sought a conviction on these grounds. That's clearly not true. I mean, it's just self-evidently not true. Some wouldn't, some would. This is the problem with political prosecutions, the problem with prosecutions in general. Clearly, it's not an open and shut case, but people certainly get indicted on matters that are not open and shut cases. You bring it before a grand jury, the grand jury is the ultimate determinant. I mean, the fact that he didn't even impanel a grand jury itself is indicative of the fact that they were trying to, he hit her hard, and you know, she's going to suffer for it in some fashion. She's going to suffer for it a lot less than she might have otherwise, despite the fantasies and delusions of the supporters of Donald Trump, because the person who will have to make her suffer is Donald Trump, and he is probably the least able person to manage the charge against her as a political matter for the Republican Party.
So do you expect the media, which I mean, you know, the if you look at the New York Times and the Post today, the Washington Post, do you expect them to sort of follow up on this in a sort of different tone than the one that they've addressed her with up until now? I mean, might someone come up to her, a sort of friendly, and say, well, why have you claimed repeatedly that you didn't send any classified material through these servers when in fact you did?
Well, you know, the media conspiracy theory would say that as long as she's 5 points up in the polls, they'll be perfectly happy to hit her hard on this in order to make sure that the record is, you know, that no one can accuse the media of having not investigated something, you know, that thoroughly.
That's their room to sort of play in.
Yeah, that she's got a comfortable lead. And indeed, you know, there are two pieces in the last 24 hours, one by Nate Silver at 538 and one by Sean Trendy at Real Clear Politics, both examining the supposed discrepancy between the state-level polls and the national polls showing Hillary way ahead, state-level polls, particularly in swing states, showing the race closer. And basically, they both say they don't show the race much closer, and there is very little discrepancy between the state and the national polls if you look at them seriously. And she's got a comfortable lead, and almost everybody is now giving her close to 250 electoral votes as a solid base. And as we're looking at it now, not only is Trump threatening to lose Utah, we've already heard that maybe or maybe not he might be in trouble in Arizona. Now he's in trouble in Kansas. Now, Kansas is an odd state. It does have Democratic officials win statewide and stuff like that. But I, you know, that is as rock rib Republican a state at the national level as you can imagine. And if he's behind in Kansas, the race is over. So, and that's July. And so here we have the moment at which Trump or Republicans could turn it from a referendum on this, you know, out of control, loudmouth, lunatic Republican, and turn it to the crook, you know, prevaricator, liar, open liar, deceiver, dissembler in the Democratic Party. And as I say, it just strikes me, based particularly on his unbelievable performance last night at his big rally in North Carolina, that Trump it's very clear that Trump is totally unsuited to the task of taking this to Hillary. Anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, if you were advising Donald Trump, you would say, stop speaking extemporaneously. Just stop. Don't do it anymore. Don't say anything that isn't written on the teleprompter, because every time you open your mouth, you say something stupid that takes the spotlight off of Hillary Clinton. And today, of all days, you should have just shut up and let Hillary Clinton take the news cycle. He's simply incapable of doing that. And I guarantee you he's gotten that advice from a lot of well-meaning people. And he can't do it. There's some theories that he needs to be in the spotlight, that he can't let the spotlight go off of him. And I don't think that, I think that gives him too much credit, too much forethought. I think he just says whatever he thinks feels good in the moment. And last night resulted in the sort of dominant controversy today in the press that is has to do with Donald Trump. We'll get to the last one, which is still kind of being resolved, I think, in a bit. But his most recent is the resurrection of something that he said very often, but that didn't get a lot of press, and which is now getting a ton of national press because it's the general election, that Saddam Hussein was admirable in the sense that he was a terrorist hunter. And when he was in power, there was a little bit more predictability, if not stability, in Iraq. And by removing him as the dictator of Iraq, we unleashed this Pandora's box that resulted in ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Nusra and the whole McGillicuddy over there. So it's become the focus of
Hey, Noah,
Donald
you
Trump.
You just... invented a non-Jewish neologism. Fabulous. You referred to the whole McGillicuddy. The term is actually the whole Megillah.
Oops.
But you went Irish, Scotch-Irish with it. Very exciting. That's a real expansion. That's
Feel free to use that one.
It's great, the whole McGillicuddy. Now, let me just interrupt you by saying two things. One is, there's a line going around today that Dave Weigel in the Washington Post and some other people saying, why is everybody hitting Trump for saying, Saddam Hussein was great at killing terrorists? He said it before. They're only doing it because they're trying to help Hillary, or they're bashing him because they don't want to confront the truth of what he says about the Iraq War. And I just want to say that as somebody who watched that rally last night, and I was watching it, and there aren't many people who have watched Donald Trump not on the campaign trail as granularly as I have for the past year. I had not heard him say, Saddam Hussein is a bad guy, but you know what? He was really great at killing terrorists. I hadn't heard it, and I went completely bonkers on Twitter. I've got a lot of followers in the mainstream media, and I think in part because I was watching it and others were watching it and we were all interacting, that the story got bigger in some part because I reacted to it so powerfully. And the truth is, I'd never heard him say it before. I didn't know that he had said it before, and it was astounding. It's jaw-dropping. I mean, just to really quickly go through this, Saddam Hussein not only didn't kill terrorists, he aided and abetted terrorists. He had a terrorist training camp. He had a 747 at the terrorist training camp to teach people how to hijack planes. He paid Palestinians who killed Jews $25,000 a head. Terrorists that he trained pushed an American in a wheelchair named Leon Klinghoffer off a cruise ship in 1986 to his death. I mean, Saddam Hussein was, according to, until the two leading state sponsors of terrorism in the world were Saddam Hussein's Iraq and Iran. That is, what Saddam Hussein did was he killed Shiites and he killed Kurds.
Well, yeah, and I think funnily enough, I had the sort of the Weigel reaction when I saw this, and I even thought I was sort of having some weird deja vu because I said, didn't he say something like this before? But what I think was new last night was this sort of where he said, so Saddam used a little gas.
He said that in December.
Oh, that wasn't last night.
No,
well, then I have it exactly.
No, but please continue with that.
Well, that's been resurrected at least. And to me, that's a profoundly disgusting thing because, as you were saying, he used gas. This was the Halabja attack on the Kurds that killed some 50,000 innocents and children and frozen in place. And
that's why this is so such irresponsibility on the part of his Republican opponents is that this I was aware of these attacks in February, but not in December and not in October. They had escaped my notice as well. In February, these were roundly condemned by just about everybody in the Republican field. But they didn't get a lot of play nationally because the Republicans in the race didn't really push the issue too hard. I mean, this is completely unconscionable, the notion that it was an acceptable way to impose stability upon a restive northern Kurdish region by deploying WMD against civilians. That's obviously an unconscionable statement for anybody to make, let alone even think. But the fact that Republicans in this race didn't hammer him on that was all part of this collective action problem, this conceit that everybody wanted to be the last man standing, and as a result you have this really deeply disturbed individual who managed to secure the nomination.
Look, the other point here is that what he was saying was that what we need to do, we in the United States need to do, is take lessons from Saddam Hussein on how to kill terrorists. But Saddam Hussein wasn't killing terrorists. He was killing opponents of his regime inside his country.
A distinction he doesn't really make.
Right. Well, I mean, so it gives you some pause to think what lessons he wants to take if he becomes president of the United States then, doesn't it? I mean, if you think about it, if you sort of follow the analogy through, that's the whole thing. He wants to sound like a tough guy and claim that Obama's a wimp and doesn't know what's going on because, he'd waterboarding is too good for them and he'd do much worse than waterboarding. And again, you don't quite know what he's referring to or what it is that he's saying. Is he saying that he would waterboard or do worse to Omar Mateen. Omar Mateen is dead. You know, the guy who perpetrated the Orlando massacre is dead. These guys get killed in the course of their actions. So waterboarding a corpse isn't exactly going to help. So who is it
He hasn't overruled collective punishment. In fact, he's endorsed the quote-unquote killing of terrorist families explicitly.
Right. But, you know, right. So where is that going to happen? Anyway, I think the whole point here is that getting back to Hillary, so Trump had one job yesterday, which was to let the country stew in the knowledge that Hillary Clinton had been accused or had been named by the FBI director as somebody extremely reckless with classified information in circumstances that would grant administrative punishment to other people. And instead, he goes off and starts loud-mouthing it about Saddam Hussein and terrorism and steps on the news and divides the country's attention, as Noah has documented time and time and time again in many blog posts. This is a bizarre habit that, again, gives rise to a certain conspiracy theory among never-Trumpers that he is a stalking horse for Hillary, that he's only got into the race to help Hillary win. Right. Like all conspiracy theories, almost certainly untrue, but his behavior isn't doing anything to quiet the conspiracy theory.
And what does this say about the notion that he'd really take it to her in a debate? This is, you know, she has teed it up for him yesterday, and he completely whiffed.
Right, because what will he take it to her in a debate? He's going to stand there in a debate and say, your husband bribed the attorney general, you know, you are going to get blackmailed by the Russians, and you know everything is fixed, and then she is basically going to look in the camera and say, "This man is crazy. Is this what you want for your president?"
I don't know.
I mean,
if
she's going to say
he won't bring. I don't know if he'll bring up the Russian thing because he's really trying to ingratiate himself with the Kremlin.
Okay, so we'll say China. I don't know. China, he'll say, China's China has it on you, and China and Carrier and my friend Kaimatsu, and they play golf and blah blah blah. And so what he will do is unleash the unfounded accusations against the Clintons instead of going with the founded accusations, and as a result, he will discredit the effort to discredit her.
But I am positive that that is part of why Donald Trump has the constituency he does within conservative political entertainment.
Absolutely right.
Because he kind of validates their myopic focus on things like Vince Foster and cattle futures and Whitewater and all these things that they've been litigating for two decades and have been chastised by the more visible establishmentarian aspect of the conservative movement for saying, you know, we need to move on from these things. These are fixations that aren't helping us, and you're actually doing more harm to our cause than good. This is kind of a retroactive
fixations
validation.
That aren't helping us. That's part of the point here, is that the Republican Party led an impeachment of Bill Clinton in 1998 and failed. It's not as though these, you know, this whole notion that nobody ever takes it to the Clintons is so profoundly insane that it doesn't even begin to beggars description. I mean, the Republican Party in the House, you know, impeached the President of the United States for the second time in American history. And we sit here with all this, oh, they're all wimps and everyone's a wimp and, you know, Trump is not a wimp and it's enough of this wimpingness and wimpishness and blah, blah. Point is, people have scar tissue. People have scar tissue from doing these things, from dealing with these matters. And the scar tissue is educative, as scar tissue should be. That's one of the things that happens when you get injured. You then get prudent about not repeating the things that might do you injury. And here the Republican Party is in 2016 about to have its head cut off by another Clinton for overreaching and for, you know, trying to use their, you know, Bill Clinton is a person beneath contempt. His behavior in the Oval Office was beneath contempt and was shocking and horrible, and he should have resigned from office to protect the United States. The problem was that the Starr report and the investigation could never prove that there was a quid pro quo, that Monica Lewinsky had been handed a job in exchange for her silence on matters that she knew about, and so the impeachment failed, and the impeachment was a year process. That was 18 years ago. and people have forgotten, and Hillary and Bill are crooks, and they behave really badly, and it's really terrible, and they manage somehow to behave like crooks while not doing the thing that crosses the unambiguous line that gets them, you know, thrown in the pokey. And as I say, Donald Trump is the worst person on earth to litigate this case against him, because he can't do it more in sorrow than in anger. He can't do it quietly and devastatingly. He can only do it by going to the wrong place at the wrong time.
So, well, what about the call for a House Republican commission now on Comey's findings?
Well, Comey is apparently going to testify next week, I believe, before, I'm not sure which House panel. I guess the Judiciary Committee is going to call him and ask him. And that could be a very good hearing, in the sense that if, you know, if it is handled appropriately, and Comey is not, you know, somebody doesn't ask Comey who paid you and stuff like that, I mean, Comey is going to have to dilate on his findings and then answer this reasonable prosecutor standard. And since he didn't take questions from the press yesterday, at least be compelled to explain the logic by which he could say X, Y, he could say W, X, and Y, but not indict on Z.
Well, I believe the speaker has asked for the FBI to surrender their evidence that they have against Hillary Clinton. And wouldn't the Justice Department be able to dispel a lot of this if they were to say, okay, well, we accept the FBI director's recommendation, but we want to put this before a grand jury?
Well, it could. It's obviously not going to, because the Justice Department the President of the United States just endorsed. Endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. He's not going to. Okay.
I would imagine that the Republicans in the House could say, well, let's just wink, wink, nudge, nudge, elbow in the ribs, Justice Department, put this before a grand jury, and we won't have to do any of this.
Well, they could say it, and it's not going to happen. I mean, they can say it, and then they can say no. You know, the fact is that we have a process.
That's even better.
Well, okay, but he'll say. But what he'll say is, we have a process. It's not, you know, what goes on in these investigations is not a matter of public record, and it's not your business. You are the House. We are the executive branch. We, you know, we have the policing function. You have oversight. That's fine. You have your oversight. You cannot maintain oversight over a specific FBI investigation in that way due to. Now, what they can ask, by the way, and I think they will ask, is what about the guy who set up the server, who took the fifth 125 times? What about Huma Abedin? What about Cheryl Mills? What did they testify to? And, of course, there is the other matter, which is not Comey's business. But if Hillary, before the Benghazi committee, said that she had sent no classified emails out through her homebrew server, and that was not true, and she knew it not to be true, that is perjury. She committed perjury before a congressional committee, and I'm not quite sure what follows from that, but, you know, that was not a perjury trap. They asked her a question, she answered it, and now 9 months later it's been revealed that she lied. It's an open and shut matter that she was under. She was sworn in and lied.
I'm also under the impression, and I could be wrong, but I'm not sure, but I'm under the impression that she testified under oath that she had surrendered all work-related emails to the State Department in 2015, and that was proven not true as well.
Right. Although, to be fair to her, in this case, she doesn't know what was. She can claim she doesn't know what was and was not surrendered. You know what I mean? Like, so there were emails that were missing. Well, who knows? There were 130,000 emails in her account. Like, she doesn't know what happened.
She had no intent to completely delete them and erase the server wouldn't be able to define the information.
Look, I'm not disagreeing with you that she was a complete felon here. I think she probably was, but you can't. But, you know, there is a question of a chain of it. You have to have points of, you know, at which you can say this happened and then this happened and then that happened. Otherwise, it's all associative, and the presumption of innocence, you know, prevails. You can't assume that she ordered something when there's no evidence that she ordered it. Having said that, if we know that she forwarded emails with classified information, and we know, by the way, as Comey said, that it is not the stamp on the top of the header that connotes whether something is classified, you are supposed to know. I've been through one of these security briefings myself. You are supposed to know I had code word clearance as a staffer in the Reagan White House. You are supposed to know what is classified information. You're not governed by a predecessor person putting a stamp at the top of a piece of information. It is her obligation to know that which is classified, and most of what passes, if anything is mentioned about the internal workings of the U.S. government abroad, that is a piece of classified information, as a matter of fact. So, the classification is not, as I say, is not a stamp, and that's a key element of this. That a really smart and able, good debater and serious person could take her down to Chinatown in a couple of debates and leave her as a bleeding husk on the floor, and that's not going to happen when the person in question is Donald Trump.
Now, that all said, I think if the Republican request for FBI evidence drags on, it could still backfire, because if
on Republicans,
yes,
or on, okay,
yes, because if they're seen to be pushing this once the sort of scandal fatigue of it sets in. And then it looks like, okay, this is another after-the-fact, sour grapes, hopeless search for a smoking gun, not letting, you know, these sort of competing tantrums on both sides. It's not, I think it's going to, however unjust, I think that could end
up. No, that'll absolutely set in, yeah, if it hasn't already set in.
Right. I mean, but that's different from Comey testifying. I mean, that, you know,
that's
in
just
a week.
That's a political argument. Yeah. And it's the truth.
Look, the point is that bucket of water is going to have to be carried carefully by Democrats. That is to say, it cannot be the Clinton campaign, and it cannot be the Clinton campaign surrogates who say, it's time to move on. We need to move forward. This has all been handled and answered. She needs to keep quiet about this, because if she is seen to start getting aggressive on the question of whether or not she misbehaved when the FBI director said she misbehaved, that will backfire on her. However, if four or five Democratic senators want to take this up, who are not her official campaign surrogates, and go, you know, completely hog wild, and I'm sure there will be some Democrat in the House hearing next week who will stand there and say, this is outrageous and unseemly, we need to move on. But that, I don't think that will look good, you know, because Comey has agreed to testify, and he's going to go testify, and he said, because of the unusual need for transparency in this case, I need to tell the American people what happened. So they're going to say, okay, we have like five or six more questions since you said you need to tell us what happened. It's not unreasonable to ask the questions. And indeed, if the Democrats were smart, they would let him dilate a little more.
You'll have media panels. Well, they'll say this is just part and parcel of the Republicans' obsession with trying to get Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. You'll have a public policy polling poll that shows 75% of the public wants to move on from this, and mm-hmm. then that'll precipitate segments on the NBC Nightly News, and it'll be a very circular process.
I don't know. Honestly, I think this is where it is the case that the Comey statement is not, you cannot, this is not that dismissible. It just isn't that dismissible. Now, if they talk about it 10,000 times a day in August and September and October, then maybe. And if they're like, they, you know, if they start getting into like the weeds about who isn't getting this and who's not, that, you know, officials you never heard of doing this or that, yeah, then it'll get too confusing. But I mean, everybody had to concede. Everybody in the media had to concede yesterday that Comey hit her with a 2x4 over the head. I mean, you can't help it. And, you know, I mean, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the New York Times, everybody was doing stories on the 5 points, at which Comey proved that Hillary had been lying from the time of the outrageously bad UN press conference in March 2015 until the present about how she had handled the emails.
And if it becomes a referendum on whether or not Hillary Clinton is a liar, Hillary Clinton wins. Everybody knows she's a liar. That's baked
well,
in.
Well, there you go. And that is a very important point, because if Trump walks around saying, Hillary's a liar, Hillary's a liar, Hillary's a liar, he's also a liar. Like, you know, how many fact checks are there on him with his ridiculous nonsense? So, you know, mazel tov. where the country has two pathological liars running for office against each other. It's really not, you know, having one call the other a path. That's not the point, right? What is the point? The point here is that Hillary Clinton, who wants to be president of the United States, is a person who is reckless with our national security. That's the point, who is unforgivably reckless in handling our national security, and it ties into the question of whether or not she used her Secretary of Stateship in some fashion for her and her family's and her foundation's personal gain. And that is an easy case to make by a coherent, rational person who can make a coherent, rational case. That could have been Marco Rubio. It could have been John Kasich. It could have been Chris Christie. It could have been about 12 of the 16 people on stage with him, but it's not him.
One thing that we haven't gotten into yet, which we probably should because it dovetails with that, is their inability to roll with a punch. The Trump team cannot take a punch. They cannot mitigate damage or do damage control or isolate an event so that it doesn't spiral out of control. They allow little controversies to become huge, all-consuming controversies by just feeding the fire. And the most recent example of this is one over the quote-unquote anti-Semitic tweet that the Donald Trump campaign lifted from an anti-Semitic message board and then spent the next 3 days trying to say wasn't exactly right. What it was.
Now, here's something interesting about that. So I saw that tweet Saturday morning, right? Saturday morning, what was that, July 2nd? When it was tweeted out by Don Scavino Jr., Trump's genius head of social media, and by genius I mean idiot. I mean, unbelievable. Like, the fact that this guy is a major official of a presidential campaign is enough to make you want to run screaming through the town, crying and looking for, you know, emigration to New Zealand. But anyway, so he tweets out this crooked Hillary with a bunch of, you know, money behind it and this six-pointed star. And I looked at it, and somebody said, "Oh, look, it's an anti-Semitic. See, it's Hillary and dollars and a Magen David." And I looked at it, and I thought, you know, it looks like a sheriff star to me. I don't know. And I think I even tweeted, "It looks like a sheriff star." But it was still, you know, the fact that anybody could look at it this way shows how incompetent they are. Because you could look at it and say it's a sheriff star, then you look at it and you go, "Ooh, meh. Probably shouldn't do that. It's a six-pointed star," and people could object to it. Right? So I actually thought that that's what it was. And then like 20 minutes later, somebody's like, "Oh, guess where we found the original image?" So the original image was on Reddit. I think it was on Reddit. Was on Reddit poll, which is an alt-right anti-Semitic site.
Two pieces down from it was an anti-Semitic slur confirming the point of the message.
Right. So I'm just saying, the editor of, you know, America's foremost Jewish publication, thought originally that it was an ill-advised effort to make a sheriff star, right? So, and in fact, the campaign itself seemed to acknowledge this by deleting the tweet, right?
So they
deleted the tweet, and the thing to say was, no, they deleted the tweet, and then the thing to say was, "Oh my God, you know, we got this piece of, you know, we got this, we thought it was clever, and then it turned out to be from this terrible site. We were so sorry. It was, you know, really unforgivable, and I, Don Scavino Jr., should resign and go back to middle school so that I can get a diploma from elementary, so I can get an eighth grade diploma, so that I maybe can get, you know, hired to mow a lawn somewhere." But he didn't resign, and then Trump defended it. I mean, the astonishing thing is they deleted the tweet.
They repurposed it. They put a circle over it.
Yeah, they put a circle over it. So they deleted it. They put a circle over it. They should have just deleted it, but whatever. And then Trump defended. Then Trump said it wasn't. It was just a sheriff's badge and, you know, the dishonest media. Well, that's insane. Like, that's what you're saying. No, it's insane. You make a mistake, you kill the mistake, you kill the messenger. That's what a smart campaign does. You say, "Get this guy out of here. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing." Trump himself wouldn't want an anti-Semitic tweet out. That was, you know, that's totally beside the point. And yet, because his line is, you never agree, never fight, never apologize. You know, Roy Cohn told me that. Some of his best friends are Jewish, and Roy Cohn was Jewish. And so Roy Cohn told him, you never apologize, you just move forward. So here we are, 4 days later.
If only it was a one-off, you could say it's incompetence. But this is not a one-off. This guy, not Trump himself, he is insulated from this a little bit. But what's his name, Scavino.
Don Scavino Jr.
Yeah, people are begin to investigate his social media habits. And about two of the like four devoted Trump followers that he supports are the one of whom is the face of the quote-unquote alt-right, which is a virulently racist, anti-Semitic group of individuals who populate online message boards and are very excited about the prospect of Donald Trump.
And if you are a Commentary Magazine reader, as you should be, look up Jamie Kirchick's piece, Trump's Terrifying right. Online Brigades, in our June 2016 issue for more.
It's a real thing. These are people who are very excited about white nationalism. They see Donald Trump as the avatar of their revenge against a series of mulatto classes, and it's very racially tinged, and it's ugly. And these Don's, whatever, I can't remember how to pronounce his name.
Don Scavino Jr.
And you know, he's legitimizing that.
And the thing is, when I first saw the tweet, I had the same reaction that you did, John. And you get very upset because you don't want there to now be a fuss over a star that wasn't intended as a dog whistle to anti-Semites. You know, you don't want to sort of, you know, take the power out of the genuine accusations. And then it turns out to be one. And then, of course, it occurred to me, why would there be a sheriff's badge on a podcast?
Right. Well, but I mean, the whole point about this is, you know, this is serious business. The world is awash in horrendous and horrific anti-Semitism. The Trump campaign has been quietly either abetting or has been the recipient of the benefit of a quiet, you know, sotto voce, rising anti-Semitism in the United States, particularly in this weird, you know, in this weird realm. But like, one doesn't need to have a fight over a meme and a tweet. You know, we got bigger fish to fry. We got bigger problems going on, you know, and that is another reason why Trump is such a dangerous candidate for the United States, because he directs us into these bizarre eddies and distractions, and the notion that a President Trump wouldn't spend his entire life, you know, like, you know, chasing a squirrel when it crosses his, you know, crosses his vision, and, you know, take his eye off the ball and go off on some demented tangent every day is what is to be expected. And so this is the choice that America has.
Right. So we're looking at, this is the good old days. Right now, these are the good times.
Right, and that's why Barack Obama has a 55% approval rating, which, as I've said before and will say again, remember, if Barack Obama's approval rating on Election Day is over 50%, Hillary Clinton will win. That is the, you know, historically, that is the key, you know, focus point determinant. And Donald Trump, and now I think, oddly enough, Hillary herself. Bad news about Hillary herself reminds people that, you know, whatever you can say about Obama, and we've spent 7.5 years saying terrible things about Obama is not personally corrupt. There is no evidence of personal. Okay, fine. There's evidence when he was, you know, in Chicago and his friend Tony Resco. But as president, there's no evidence of, you know, of personal corruption. And he seems to be a clean guy with a nice marriage and two very attractive children. And compared to the dumpster fires of the Clinton and Trump families, you know, in the history of the Clinton and Trump marriages and all that, you know, he looks like a reasonable and rational, insane person, and that's going to help get Hillary elected. So, we come to an end on this Wednesday, July 6th, Commentary Magazine, coming to you from New York, the 71-year-old monthly of opinion analysis, cultural analysis and political opinion. From a conservative perspective, please join us at commentarymagazine.com. You get 8 free reads, pay $19.99 a month, $19.99 a year. I wish it was $19.99 a month, but it's $19.99 a year for our full digital access and $29.99 for access plus our physical, beautiful monthly magazine. We'll be back next week for Abe Greenwald and Noah Rothman. I'm John Podhoretz, and keep the candle burning.